This week on The Droids, Andor premieres, 3 episodes, Tony Gilroy, all that we could have hoped for and more. The droids are talking about Andor.
Tony.
Welcome back to The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Chris, Ryan, and Sam, I am Mike. And did that sound like we have Tony Gilroy on the pod? Did I make it sound like Tony's on this pod this week?
Hey, stick around, listener, and find out. We save the best parts for the end of the episode.
He's going to talk about the Light of the Jedi with us.
He's going to wrap it up, finally.
Well, we were waiting for him, and now we have it. I think we just dive in. Let's just get right to it. There's no preamble needed. Sometimes you just want to talk about an incredible episode of, or 3 episodes of TV.
Yeah.
And look, Andor's rewriting the game here. And not rewriting all of what Star Wars is, but this is really a pleasure to watch these first 3 episodes. And unlike anything else in the streaming era so far, to start out the conversation, I think I just want to tee it up as like, what's one aspect of this show that you were really delighted by?
The writing is really good.
Yeah.
Just like legitimately good, like the scene to scene, the writing is good. It's a joy to listen to. People say interesting things about interesting topics.
Yeah.
And it also is a television show where it's like there, it leaves time for like to see smaller moments of things.
I love that. I love that so much.
Yeah. It's the first Star Wars show, and like, you know, I've had varying degrees of enjoying the Star Wars shows. It's the first one that feels like an actual television show.
Right. You took the words right out of my mouth, Ryan.
That's, I actually did. Like, you said that, it in the text, so I'm sorry.
No. That's good. I agree with that. I feel like the other shows have been trying to emulate a movie, and in fact, the marketing, they've always said, this is more like a movie than a TV show. Like, they kept... That's,
which they're also saying with this baffling.
Yeah, but this could be 12 episodes. You're absolutely right, though. It does that. That's what delighted me, is that it actually felt like a television show and not something that was kind of its own. It just felt like a TV show. Like you could watch it. I could turn it on channel 6 and it'd be on.
Yeah,
I think I've said on the pod before that, like, you know, I was not as hot on Rogue One as, you know, the larger fandom seemed to be when I first saw it in theaters. I was more invested in the sequel duology than I was in Rogue One initially. And on rewatch, you know, my opinion has been reshaped. But I think the big reason for why I was underwhelmed by Rogue One, the film, was my own expectations. And it was because I had read and watched so much leading up to the film, where a big part of it was, you know, talking about the new characters, and they talked specifically about, you know, the character Cassian Andor and how he was more of a spy. He was infiltrating the Empire and everything and working behind enemy lines. And I, you know, as a lifelong James Bond fan and like big fan of kind of like, you know, just 60s, 70s Cold War era, you know, post-war thrillers like that, I was like, ooh, that sounds so good. And it still was, Rogue One was still more of a war movie. It was like a Men on a Mission. It was, you know, a Dirty Dozen type movie. And now I appreciate it for that. But what I love about this show is it feels like it's delivering on that promise. It's giving us the backstory that, like, they kind of talked up. And of course, you know, for me, this is like, it's James Bond meets Star Wars, which is kind of my two favorite things. I'm waiting for Batman to show up and then I'm set.
I heard
it's right?
In the fourth episode.
So for me, it's the ambiance, atmosphere, and kind of like overall tone. I don't disagree with either thing that Chris and Ryan said. The writing, I think, is great. And I, you know, the TV show. It does feel episodic. I've only seen the first episode, I should also say, for everybody on the pod. I'm pretty hyped on this after just one episode.
I am as well. I think we all are. The thing to me, and this is, you know, something that I feel like we've said about a lot of Disney-era Star Wars as they've gone back to creating the whole thing from that early promo for The Force Awakens, real sets, all of that kind of thing. The thing that stood out to me was how lived in all of this felt, you know, from the numerous times that we saw characters, you know, imbibing of some beverage. There was some, you know, a lot of different food that they were eating. A lot of moments, and you talked about the stillness, that there was a little bit more space for things, that it was slower at times, that we saw more. We learned more in character expressions and hesitancy and, like, reaction than we did in so many others, especially when you're talking about there's a portion of the three episodes where you have several characters, I mean, an entire population of characters who do not speak a language that anybody can decipher because they're not putting subtitles on there.
Well, you put the, you have to select them on your... On your app.
Do you? You can select whatever language it is from. what is it again? Is it Karn?
Canary.
Canary.
They wear canary yellow. That's how you can remember.
Oh, there that's good. That's a good. There. What do they call that when you
a cognate.
There you go.
Well, so those things all kind of came together to me and just really made me feel much more deeply connected to even characters who had just a brief moment. Like Cyril to me, who is the villain, who is part of that patrol, who's the officer who goes on his own after the chief leaves. I think everything about that actor, I just think is fantastic. Like they give him things like he's tightened in his suit and he's trying to assert himself and him learning.
I could talk about that performance for the entire rest of the episode.
Well, I think
personally.
I think we really can, but like the first thing to me was when he was like working himself up to go into the chief's office and you're sitting there with him for a good amount of time. Like it feels very much like they're letting him do more in the space than you'd find in so many shows. And it makes me really wonder how this is received by, you know, the Marvel, the Star Wars, you know, group who's just looking for whatever the next cameo and action bit is.
Yeah, right.
Like how are they sitting there where there's multiple times where they sit on characters' faces and I love that.
Yeah. That's part of what, the appeal of this show to me as well is that the fact that they're characters we've seen, but it's also like everything we see, how they react, what they do, where they live, it's all new. And I think we really haven't had that because A, it doesn't take place on Tatooine, and B, it's not a character that we know of, really know of. So I feel like all these little details are interesting because it's the first time we're seeing them.
You brought up, Mike, you brought up, you know, Marvel and the MCU, and one of the things that's working so well, and this speaks to the writing, I think, and pacing, but, you know, I recently watched, and I enjoyed, the new Thor movie, Love and Thunder. Right?
No spoilers.
I won't.
Some of us are very far behind.
I won't spoil anything. But speaking broadly, I think a criticism of that film that I have that I think is you could apply this, Mike, pretty widely across, you know, post Endgame and even pre Endgame, right? Marvel phases is that a lot of the humor is self-reflective and it's self-deprecating and it's self-aware. A lot of the humor that comes in Marvel movies is about the actors and the characters knowing and being cooler than, like, knowing that they're in a Marvel movie and being aware of and cooler than it. And one of the things that I like,
the classic is like that just happened.
The humor there, I'm again only one episode in, but in the first episode, there's several moments that play like jokes and have genuinely funny beats. But because it's all the tone of the show is very serious, and what they do is they allow for humor to arise out of a serious situation rather than, oh, quick, put in a joke here.
Right.
I think I'm saying that. I don't know if I'm being
articulate,
but that's what I love.
It exists within the world. Like, it's not
purely jokes. It's funny thing. There's funny moments and there's funny reactions, but there's not, you know. And,
right.
And to me, that
playing it
makes
real.
the whole thing feel more, yeah, feel more real, feel more lived in, feel more organic, and I love that.
We talked in our previous episode that, Chris, we were going to maybe go context-free. That went out of the road.
Oh, yeah. Well, right. You know what? Honestly, I did pretty well. I watched the trailer, but that was about it. I didn't see any
I didn't even watch a trailer before this.
Wow,
I went in completely.
Trailer. Wow.
I hadn't seen anything about it other than.
Did you watch Rogue One? So,
That was the trailer for the show.
Wait. I thought this was just the actor. Is this related? Do I know what's going to happen to this guy? What a bummer.
Well, the trailer actually kind of made me believe that Fiona Shaw as Marva was not going to last past the first few episodes. I thought that she was going to die because they show her tear and an explosion in the trailer. So I thought there was going to be an explosion when we see her later on. And sorry, Sam, but when we see her in episode 3 and she's still there as they begin the reckoning. But anyway, I couldn't avoid it because I wasn't ready for the night on Twitter where they did the Andor premiere and all these early reviews started to drop. Yeah. I'm like, well, there it goes. I didn't expect that. And I was just, there it is. But aside from my own experience of being exposed to all the outsiders' opinions, I think, you know, there's a level also that I really appreciate of the casting throughout. And I heard this elsewhere and read this elsewhere. The benefit of being in the UK and just pulling from incredible stage actors and just putting them in any one of these roles, like even the chief. The chief is in it for 3 minutes? And when he showed up, I don't remember what else I've seen him in. I was like, all right, yep, we're in for
Game of Thrones.
It was perfect. Yeah, yeah. I mean, his little line, it goes back to the testament to the writing, but it was just like, that whole scene.
That's the exact scene that I'm thinking of, is when he's like, there were two pre-war officers. They went out and did this, and then they were supposed to be. And it was just like, yeah, great. Someone wrote this. Someone took the time, and they were like, this is we're creating a world by having someone talk about the intricacies of it. Right. The other thing that this is really early on, that I was just like, oh, okay. We're playing with real money now, is how it felt, which was the kind of inciting incident where Cassian is in the alley with those two dudes who jump him, right? They realize that one guy has been accidentally shot. And there's a moment that they don't put a button on. They just have, he's looking at the guy realizes he's dead, and the dude unpointedly looks down the alleyway and sees that there is no one else there. And we realize as the audience, because we're savvy enough, and we're there with the characters, that he realizes that Cassian's smartest move is to kill him now.
That scene plays so well, and you're so with them, and it's about trusting the audience. It's about trusting that the people watching have seen enough and have consumed enough media and are familiar enough and can put themselves enough in the shoes that it's This guy went from being in the position of absolute authority to, it's crazy to see how him go from so arrogant and cocksure to I'm literally begging for my life now.
It's so much more rewarding as an audience member for it to be the show trusts me to clock this. And so we're now experiencing this with the characters, as opposed to this weird, you were saying, Sam, meta narrative of the characters explaining to us by being kind of glib about it or whatever it is. It's just so refreshing to see it.
And then you add that layer when it goes back to the chief scene where it's wait a second. This is this weird post-imperial or pre-imperial kind of post-Clone Wars age where it's this great, weird, fuzzy gray area. They're a private company, so he kind of explains, this is not worth the trouble. We don't want the Empire on our back. We don't need us to look like we were messing around. This tension, and it creates so much complexity that it's I feel it's so satisfying rather than say, these are the bad guys, these are the good guys, let's fight, because they could have so easily been just let's get Cassian. But now we know that that the bad guy is he's kind of working against his own interest. It's very complex.
The bad guy is also like a loser.
right?
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
but
yeah.
He's also, like, he's a person. Like, we know what his motivation is, even though it's never clearly stated because it's all red on his face the entire time. He's trying to prove himself to be this villainous tyrant. He doesn't think of himself as a villain. To be honest, I thought that it was completely a send up of white supremacists.
Sure.
That's exactly what it felt
like. Sure. Where it's, like, he's like, I believe in this, like, the empire. Well, and then this older man who's, like, in the middle of stuff's like, this is the scenario that's happened. It'll happen again. Well, he's cynical about it, but for the benefit.
The show is overtly political, right? Yeah. And it's like, you know, I'm interested, is a generous word. I'm curious to see where the discourse goes with this because, you know, it seems like it's like, well, people, you know, this toxic fandom is going to be so pissed about this because it's like essentially like making fun of them. Right. Yeah. But like there's like and as it rightfully should be, it should be making fun of them. And I hope they're mad. But the interesting thing is that the time in Star Wars that this is happening, there's like the chief guy that's just kind of like, listen, like, whatever, man, like, I'm retiring on Tuesday, like, he's so over it in the midst of, like, he's kind of like an institution man, like, he's just like, I've been doing this for a long time, in the midst of people being radicalized. But and the interesting thing, and we'll probably get into this more in episode 3, but like the interesting thing is that it is showing people being radicalized, like, for the rebellion and for the empire.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, has the trust in the audience to be, like, a little messy, where it's just like, listen, rebellions are messy. You know what I mean? And to also be like, there's a line in episode 3 that Cassian says where he's talking about walking into an Imperial base. And he's like, I walk in and I spit in their food and I wear their uniforms and they feel so safe they don't think I could walk in here, right? And I do not think it is an accident that that is conjuring imagery of the insurrectionists on January 6th, right? Like, I can't help but think that they were aware that him saying, like, I'm going to walk into their buildings, I'm going to take what I want, right? But it was strange to me because I was like, they're conjuring that with our hero in the rebellion. Like, we, you know, in the world of Star Wars, we agree that, like, the rebellion is the good guys and the empire are the bad guys. And I was like thinking about it and I was like, oh, that's like a little messy, you know, like, you know, that they kind of like conflated that imagery. And then I was thinking about it and I was like, well, they're presenting that like a rebellion is messy and also that it's dependent on the people involved that, like, to decide what is, like, righteous and like necessary, right? It's like it's like, just,
well, I think
you have to,
I mean,
bring your own morality to it, like, right, obviously people on this podcast, we think that, like, the January 6th insurrection was terrible,
that's heroic,
right?
Accept that a form of rebellion is not terrible and is necessary.
Well, I
and
mean
that those things resemble each other only only in execution, but not in context or intention.
It's gonna get. I mean, we see that in Rogue One to a degree of with like Saw Gerrera, like where it's kind of it's like a different extreme, right? There's like different points in time, so we're seeing the through line of the rebellion that we know and love from Star Wars, ultimately, like, we're seeing how that rebellion started, but it is a messy process, and I think that's so cool to explore, and it is an angle in Star Wars that hasn't, to my knowledge, unless it's in the extended universe, listeners, please let us know if there's anything like this, but I think it's really cool that they're kind of getting into this, and that it is messy. It's not, like, cut and dry, and decisions they make now might affect decisions in the future.
And also that, like, not all versions of these things, like, a righteous rebellion is not the same as the January 6th insurrection, you know what I mean? And it's like the audience should be able to know that for themselves, you know what I mean? Obviously we're talking about a fantasy thing, but it's using that, like, that imagery to like make people like think about this, which is just that it's like you need to decide like right and wrong are two different things.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you brought it. Like my takeaway from that line and that reading reminded me more of stories that I remember reading in history class or even movies that we've seen of World War II and those of Jewish communities who were serving the Nazis who would do something like spit in their food when they weren't looking. Like I think of it, I connected it that way more than January 6th, but like there's all the different versions of rebellion. And when you're on the side of rebellion, you don't think you're wrong. And whether you're on the side of the empire or the tyranny, like you don't think you're wrong either.
You don't know where you're going. Yeah.
Ryan,
what's his name's? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. Go ahead.
I was gonna say the her character name's escaping me.
Marva.
Marva
or Biz.
Bix. Bix.
Bix.
Bix. I still don't know the the friend. Wait, the friend that has the boyfriend.
Fiona Shaw
Bix,
or
Bix.
Or the
no
the friend. Bix. Yeah. The friend that has the nosy boyfriend. Mm-hmm. Or nosy partner. I see that as another one of these instances where it's like that guy, he might not agree with the empire, but he also knows that like he wants to protect this woman, like he into his downfall. But I think that's kind of like another instance of like this is really messy, like it's complicated, and that just is another layer to the whole thing.
Yeah, I think with. Just on this whole kind of comparison and discussion of rebellion and I'm in agreement completely that it's highlighting the messiness of it. But I also think this might be, you know, Ryan, you're talking about, oh, I'm curious what the fan reaction is going to be. I kind of think what we're talking about here might be the exact, like, it might be like the Gilroy effect of like the way he can thread the needle, that it's kind of like, look, man, there's going to be people who, if they, you know, hopefully they're not part of the, you know, January 6th insurrection and riot and all this stuff, but there's going to be people who maybe are more sympathetic to that side of things watching this and aligning with the rebellion and aligning with Andor and seeing, like, see, this is what they're trying to do. And because, you know, they're looking at that as a statement against, you know, the authority or an authoritarian regime or a government run amok or something.
Yeah.
So I'm not, this is in no way my position, but I do think that there is art that is like, there's art that's clever enough to walk a line where like two polar opposite sides can look at it and be like, mm-hmm. I see my message here.
Yeah. And truthfully,
and that's
like,
okay
honestly,
with me personally. Honestly,
that is a piece of this that makes me slightly nervous. And not nervous because I like only in as much as that I'm afraid that they're intentionally trying to ride the line of like everyone can see themselves in this. And like I want to clarify for anyone listening, I'm sure you guys know, and I'm sure our listeners know too, this is in no way being like, see, like on both sides kind of thing. The thing that I think is interesting is that the show is just depicting something that is a complicated process and being like, if you can't tell the difference between like between right and wrong, that's your problem.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That I do. And I don't know exactly where I fall on it. I think it's, I think that's interesting, right?
The show can
do that. But I also think that like, just while we're on this, everything you guys are saying is one of the scenes that I think for me always like did not work in Rogue One was, you know, the opening scene with Andor it's where they establish him as this gray character, right? He's not, you know, we think he's the hero and then he shoots the guy. He's not the hero, but is he, you know? And it's supposed to cause us to question his allegiance to Jyn throughout, right? And it never worked for me because it's so rushed. It felt like, to me, that feels like it's got to be reshoots, you know, and everything. And I'm like, this show is doing that so much better, right?
Sure.
Like it's I think this show is so much more effectively establishing the complex nature of like, you know, again, you know, I'm not as far as you guys, but I'm thinking of that scene in the alleyway where he's both he is both so justified in, you know, defending right. himself and killing those guys, and also so not. Like, you can't just kill somebody.
It's interesting you know? Because it's also, at this point in time for this character, he is not, he's not part of the rebellion. He is,
well, right.
this
and
is
I'm,
to save his skin. Like, this is him hating his the situation that the world is in, and he knows that he has this card up his sleeve of this thing, and he's kind of like, hey, I can use this to get out of here, and I could save us from this tyranny. But so he's not, he's kind of not into the, it's not like he's like a rebel at this point, right? So I think that's interesting, whereas by the time we see it in Rogue One, it's kind of like, well, this guy, he's got to do the dirty work because we're in a war.
Well, yeah, and that's kind of like when Stellan Skarsgård's character comes in. It's kind of this thing of like, listen, you've been doing all of this because you're like angry and disenfranchised with
right.
like what's happening in the world. And like, that's like correct. You should feel that way because, you know, the Empire has like their knee on everyone's back. And he's basically saying like, so like, why don't you give it like some purpose? You know, like if you're going
yeah.
into Imperial strongholds and stealing things that no one else can steal so you could sell them, why don't you do it so that you can, like, bring down the Empire?
Right.
And I think that that's, like, an interesting... That is empirically an interesting character arc.
Yeah, it's just it's pretty like, wild.
And again, cool. it's like a character arc. I can't believe we're saying this, but it's, like, it's a character
yeah.
arc.
Yes.
It's like someone is experiencing... something new. Of course we know how they end up, but it's like we don't really know how they end up. And
yeah.
all of the new characters are fascinating.
I mean, that's like half of Star Wars is like, how did they end up here? Like that's all we really care about a lot of the time in Star Wars. It's like, how did they get to this point?
Yeah, but it's like I was just so delighted with how engaging the language was. Just literally just to hear people talking in a way that someone was like, you know what I need to do? I need to make this scene interesting. As opposed to like, you know what I need to do? I need to make sure that this scene ends with something from Star Wars in it.
Yes. Yes. Well, and that's refreshing because that's like some of the best Star Wars stuff that happens is those.
Yeah.
When we're learning new things, like we haven't learned anything new about the Star Wars universe in like years almost. We know what Tatooine looks like.
Yeah. We're now on Ferris. We know how they wake up in the morning with a nice right. big bell of
exactly.
Tatooine.
Oh,
what a cool
what a great
detail.
Thing.
It was so fun.
That didn't even like Nicole was saying, she was like, this must pay off at some point. And it may. But even if it doesn't, I was like, what a cool little detail.
That's
this dude gets up every morning and
it's like
his job.
Beauty and the beast moment.
We were just seeing like the whole like community wake up.
Yeah.
Just to be like, oh, this is how the day starts here.
Right.
Well, I want to take a step back just real quickly because, you know, we've talked about Rogue One being darker. This is darker, more adult, however you want to put it.
Yeah.
This show, in a couple ways, like, I want to get into the specifics of it, but I'm racking my brain to figure out how the people who made Book of Boba Fett made this show. Now, I know it's not the same writers. I know it's not the same creators. I know it's not the same actors.
The answer is, Mike, they didn't.
Yeah,
but you do know that it's still the same leadership at Lucasfilm put this out, and my theory is almost a one for them, one for me situation. And I'm not saying it's just Kathleen Kennedy; it may be a group. You know, Michelle Rejwan, who works with Kathleen Kennedy, all the higher ups there, where it's like we have to do one to show them the revenue gain and what we can make in all the ancillary merchandise, and then we also can make one that we care about. And that's what this one feels like because it feels, and I think, Sam, you said this in the text thread, that this is the best writing and the best Star Wars we've had since The Last Jedi. And it feels like they're like, all right, like, let's get the massive group of fans who were upset about The Last Jedi back on track by giving them some superficial Star Wars, look at that, let me recognize the Star Wars thing. And then once you do that, you can go back to maybe telling a story that's a little bit different because we have enough room on Disney Plus to do that. And so I feel like we've gotten there. And that's where you start a show for Star Wars where he does kill two characters, where the hero is doing things that heroes in Star Wars don't do, and also we start in a brothel. When has sex ever been alluded to in Star
That's
Wars?
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Two people actually have sex on this show.
Right.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You know, not in front of us, but
no,
like...
No, but also, like, there is, you know, sexual body language as well.
Sure.
Before the scene,
like someone,
too, which
someone literally like
oh
like
yeah
booty calls a guy.
Right.
Like she gets a little drunk and is like, I'm coming over, you know, like that kind of thing.
It rules.
And like and
they weren't brother and sister.
That's the other big show on television.
Yeah.
What's so funny is that that's such a funny joke, and the biggest show on television, that's like all it's about.
Wait, Game of Thrones? Or are you talking about House of Dragon?
Yeah.
Oh, is House of Dragon is. I'm not caught up, so maybe I missed some of it.
There's a lot of incest in it, Mike.
Okay. But anyway, I want to make the larger point of like where. No, I agree with you. I'm not caught up, so
it's
I was
not,
like.
Well,
is,
I'll tell you what.
Is,
it ain't an opinion.
But there's the father and the daughter's friend. That's not incest, right?
There's plenty of incest. Don't worry, Mike.
All right. I'm going to catch up to the incest.
Okay, so like we've spoken about how Tony Gilroy's. Comments and Brian Koppelman's insufferable podcast were very annoying.
Oh my
once.
God!
But
yeah,
but
I can't. Stand
we also him. Have admitted. We also have said that Tony Gilroy is kind of unimpeachably a very good writer. He just is. And I think that the answer to a lot of these questions, Mike, that you're talking about, is that they hired someone that really had no interest in making a Star Wars show,
right?
He wanted to make a television show, and like he seemingly likes Star Wars because, you know, he worked on Rogue One and he did this. Like he was called in on Rogue One and he felt compelled to do this. I can't imagine that he needs the money. But like it is like a thing where Tony Gilroy and like, you know, as mad as this will make this could make anyone on the internet if they were listening. Tony Gilroy has like this good amount of distance where he doesn't feel like playing with the action figures.
Right.
He just wants to like
make
a good show.
The little bit of media that I did see during my media blackout before the show, which was nothing. He said they did no fan service. And I'm saying that like Matt Berry from
fan service.
No fan service. He said it that they weren't going to do that. And that to me was like an awesome statement. Like,
yeah, what a relief, right?
Yeah. I was just kind of like, it takes all that weird pressure off the show, too, to be like, are they going to like, what are they going to do?
Don't
like,
worry, there's going to be. Post-credit scenes where
right.
What
am I waiting for Luke? Is he here? Is there a baby Yoda?
Let me throw out a question here to the, you know, Tony Gilroy, I would assume, as showrunner of this show, of anyone they've had working on one of the Star Wars series yet, he's probably the only one who could like tell John Favreau to go kick rocks, right?
I mean,
like
Kathleen Kennedy
you
could
see
have
the
before.
End of Michael
no,
Clayton,
but my point is my point is that like
right.
My point is that, you know, if Kathleen Kennedy, if you know, if we take at face value that she's, you know, she's coming at this earnestly and going, you know, I'm trying to find the right artist for the right projects, and she's listening to people's pitches and she's going, this sounds like a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe let's say she's a glass half full optimist and she goes, I really think that, you know, Favreau can do it. I really think Filoni can. Hey, Robert Rodriguez is interesting. He's really passionate. Let's see what he's got. You know, like I believe that she's someone who goes in with the best intent. You know, I don't necessarily, I have a hard time believing she would, you know, I don't know. I don't see her as someone who would be like, yeah, one for us, one for them as a mentality.
No.
However, when you, if you look at all those other people, it's like, you know, The Mandalorian's a hit. It all gets kind of weirdly put on Favreau's shoulders because he is the one who supposedly like pitched this arc and this, like, you know, outlined the first handful of episodes or whatever and writes the episodes. So now everybody who comes through is kind of like looking to John Favreau as some, you know, guy to guide them.
Right.
That's how it's presented.
And there's 0% chance that Tony Gilroy did
Tony Gilroy's going to be like, they're like, hey, yeah, we want you to talk to John because he's worked on it. And he's going to be like, who?
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Tony Gilroy is the only person. Tony Gilroy has probably ghost rewritten everyone who's worked on The Mandalorian in his career.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's no way that Tony Gilroy has not taken a script that Jon Favreau has worked on and ghost rewritten it at some point. Because that's kind of like, he's kind of famously like a rewriter. Like he's brought in to fix things.
And yeah, he's a fixer.
He's good.
He's kind of like a Michael Clayton of scripts, if you will.
It's
of screenwriters,
Cassian,
rather.
Cassian's kind of Michael Clayton
like
himself.
He's negotiating.
One of those, the little comm link thing. I was like, whoa, he's got the comm link.
There really is, and I don't want to be dismissive of, you know, stuff that's come before. We've enjoyed it, fine. There is a real sense just watching the show that it's like, oh, like a grown-up has entered the room.
Yeah. Sure.
You know what I mean?
Feel,
and it's like, it really does, 100%. Like, listen, it when you see something like this, you realize denial you've been living in. Obi-Wan really sucked.
Obi-Wan
wasn't
a disaster. It
and
was
it's like,
really bad.
It's like in the moment, it was fine. By the end of it, I think, like, I don't think we were being delusional on the podcast. We were saying that it was kind of getting pretty bad.
I can't say that for the fact of what they did with Reva. I'm not going to say that it sucked.
I don't think
really
it
bad.
Sucked.
I really liked Reva, and I really liked Ewan back, but I agree with you. It's not on the same level. I agree
I think the show as a whole, I think it had good stuff. And I agree with you with Reva and stuff, but I think the show was pretty bad. Boba Fett was like unfathomable.
Yeah. Unfathomable.
And the Mandalorian is the Mandalorian. And
the Mandalorian.
Yes.
Here,
and
this
good.
Is the
I
one.
Like
this is the one thing I was going to push back, just like going way back to the beginning. And I'm opening this to debate. I'm not coming down hard on either side. But you said, Ryan, that you were like, and Chris, you guys were, you know, this was the first show to you that feels like a television show, that doesn't feel like a compressed movie.
Here we go again, guys.
The only thing I was going to push back on was to say, I think you're right insofar as like this actually feels like a show of whatever you call it, you know, peak television, modern television, you know, golden era. And
prestige,
but I
television.
Think that The Mandalorian still feels to me like television from 20 years ago of,
sure.
you know, the Monster mm-hmm. of the Week thing. And
yeah.
that feels like, that to me, that feels like a TV show. Now, season two, they blurred the lines a bit and they're trying to get a little movie-esque with it, right? But
right.
I kind of think like
I
season one of, the, of Mando,
I understand
you know, felt
that.
To me like Xena, Warrior Princess.
Well, yeah, that's what I actually liked about it, and that's why I like it.
Yeah, and I feel
the
like
most
it,
of the other shows before
agreed.
That.
Agreed.
But I feel like with Mando, it's like, trying to emulate a mode of television, whereas this show is just mm-hmm. kind of like you just alluded to. It's like a new TV show. It's
yeah.
like,
okay.
what if we made a Star Wars TV show today? And this is what it would look like.
Dude, it looks cool too.
It looks
I like
real
that it like
cool.
looks like it's. I almost texted you guys. I was like, ooh, Star Wars 2049. I'm so excited.
Right. Yeah. It has that dirty vibe to it.
It. Yeah. It was very like. It's added a layer, a new aesthetic into the Star Wars lexicon, and that's also exciting, right? When, especially after, you know, the Last Jedi kind of did it, right, with some of the looks and feel of things, but like mm-hmm. for the most part, it was like the prequels are the last time we've had a new looking Star Wars, because everything we see on any of the TV series so far, the whole clear like mandate from Disney and Lucasfilm is like, make it look like 77, you know?
Yeah.
And this is fun because I think like this kind of looks, at least the, you know, what I've seen looks more like a sci-fi, like Blade Runner-y world, right? Than anything that we've gotten in Star Wars. And that's exciting because it like feels new and modern.
It feels to me, this is the first piece of Star Wars content since probably I'll go as far, and this saying there's stuff I've liked The Mandalorian. This is the first piece of Star Wars content besides the Clone Wars final season since The Last Jedi to me that it felt like the creators were looking at the thing they were making and weren't looking at me watching it.
Ooh, I like, yeah, that's a great way to put
and,
it, Ryan. Yeah.
And it feels like everyone's finally, like with this, it feels like everyone's looking in the same direction as opposed to them
yeah.
looking at us being like, huh? Eh? And us being like, what are you giving us?
Yeah.
What are you giving us? It looks like they were just like concentrating on making the show.
Right. That's, I don't think we've had that in a while. I think
it's been a long time.
It
feels like a long time.
And that's kind of what I mean, where it's like we're learning new things and it's like, it's such a gift in Star Wars to learn new things. And like, that's, I remember seeing Last Jedi, and then when Luke did his hologram move, force mm-hmm. projection. And I remember somebody asked me, said, can Jedi do that? And I was like, they can now. Like,
yeah.
I was like, that's awesome.
The same thing with Leia outside the ship. People were saying, like, can she do that? And it's like, well, look, she did it in the movie.
Yeah.
Do stormtroopers fly? They fly now.
They fly now.
I mean, this comes out of that era.
They fly now?
Of that new...
They fly now?
That comes out of that era, though, of when... the newness was happening after the Disney takeover, and mm-hmm. they were just like asking somebody at a desk, hey, you got a Star Wars story? Hey, you got a Star Wars story? And it's pretty cool to see that, like, you can kind of feel that connection. I'm almost nostalgic for the feeling that when was
2016.
Yeah, like, it's almost 10 years ago in a way. Rounding up.
it's 5 years.
Yeah,
five is almost 10.
I'm just like nostalgic though for that era, and it's kind of cool to see that, like, oh hey, this we're back, like we're back in that mode a little bit where we kind of got off course a little, where like everyone just needed to see stuff that they mm-hmm. like immediately recognized and couldn't ask any questions. Now I'm like, this is great. Give me more of this.
Yeah.
And now give me the Rian Johnson trilogy with all of this kind of stuff.
Yes. Well, I guess the thing to me is that, like, we know what this is all about for Disney. It's about making as much money as they possibly can off of the properties that they have acquired. This show, like you said it, Ryan, like Tony Gilroy is never going to toe the line and do what everybody else does. They hired somebody who could create this kind of show. But when you're pitching it to the higher ups, you're not coming in and be like, well, wait a second, what's the ship that we're going to sell as a Lego? What's the, you know, what Cassian thing can we do that he looks different than the last thing so we can sell people that? They're going to sell things from this, but this show is not the moneymaker, at least so far, that other Disney Plus series would be in terms of all the other ancillary rights. I don't know that we're going to see Cassian walking around Batuu anytime soon. Mm-hmm. Like, I just don't think that's where this is headed. And they need to think about, a lot of the time, how they make money off of it. This might have been one where they said, look, this is just going to keep people subscribing. We'll make money off of them subscribers. We're maybe not going to make as much money off of this elsewhere. So I guess I'm just saying, the pitch for this is not as easy as the other Disney Plus series. So someone had to really go to bat to make this happen, other than just saying, we've got Tony Gilroy on board.
Mike, I don't think that's true, man. I think there's less to license, maybe. What character from Star Wars has not gotten a figure made? They're going to sell Cassian Andor figures.
Oh, I absolutely agree that they will. I just think you're not going to sell as many because you're not going to have any kid who comes in and says, Cassian's my favorite character. Glad he killed those guys after getting out of the whorehouse.
Right. Yeah, I think...
That's my favorite thing that was ever said on this podcast.
Oh, yeah, so like the kid has a little Lego set where he's like, give me the information.
I think the real answer, Mike, is kind of that, like, they announced it years ago in that huge slew of announcements.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it just went fine, and then it was done.
Right.
I think it was like they just kind of announced it. They got a really talented writer to write it, and they made the show, and then they were like, oh, the show's done. And there was like no time for them to be like, never mind, we're not doing Cassian. People are really mad. People aren't liking Cassian these days, or like whatever.
That's probably very true.
Part of me wonders if
Tony Gilroy probably just wrote really good scripts and like it just kind of kept getting through, and then they were just like, we're shooting it, and then it was done.
There could have also been a point in time where this was the only other show like that was slated before pre-pandemic.
Right, yeah.
They might have just been like, this is it.
Well,
not
you
thinking.
Go. That goes back, Chris. They've been making this for 4 years. They've been making the show for
half
it's
a
been
decade.
4 years. It's been a
half
long
a decade.
Time.
Full decades, some might say. Zero decades. Round
I
down.
Love what Sam said about Tony Gilroy telling Jon Favreau to kick rocks. I do think this, I do think it's the first. I think
hey,
it's the first person they've hired that like has shown no outward reference for Jon Favreau. not that he's shown any disrespect, or probably it's literally probably that he's like, I have no thoughts about Jon Favreau.
No, I think that's what
Tony Gilroy probably has not seen Iron Man 2.
I think that people, you know, they and God bless them for this. I think it's wonderful that they, that Disney, like, will invest, you know, they'll bring in talent kind of from across the spectrum, established talent, newer talent, younger people, diverse talent, everything. And I like that. That's exciting to me. That's part of what I like. Like, I get excited about the directors and showrunners for these projects, but I think that, you know, essentially, you know, Jon Favreau's the biggest guy in the room, and not like physically. I mean, like, he's the biggest guy in the room. Like, he's the guy with the box office clout and the most experience in the room.
He made Iron Man, yeah.
And he's, you know, clearly been, you know, very successful at Disney with big projects. So it's like everybody naturally is going to walk into the room and go, well, gosh, I mean, I can probably learn a thing or two from him. This feels like a big project. I don't know what I'm doing. There's imposter syndrome. And I think like Tony Gilroy probably is just like, he seems like a guy who has never once had an experience where he was like, my confidence is not through the roof right now.
Right. You know? Yeah, he was probably like, what am I going to learn from guy who wrote Swingers?
Yeah. He's like, have you seen the ending of Michael Clayton? Do you know what happens?
I do. Cool, like, I think it's funny that we're turning this into a non-existent rivalry between. Yeah, I know. Not even rivalry. Gilroy and Jon Favreau have a rivalry, like a boot has a rivalry.
You can find it on talk show to talk show. They've just been snipping at each other all these years.
But the fact of the matter is that Tony Gilroy doesn't even think of Jon Favreau. You know? Yeah,
did you hear that Favreau spit on Tony Gilroy?
That's right. They're both in that movie.
Don't worry, darling.
Don't worry, Cassian. Yeah, I think this just comes out of a different kind of thought process. And also, it's English. It feels very English. And I'm happy to see this is not a slight against English people at all. Like, I'm just happy to see English bad guys again. I feel like every time I see, except I guess the main guy.
I love the fact that they establish, like, the different levels of villainy within, you know, you guys talked about the chief, but he is like the epitome. Like, we've lost in Star Wars with the sequel trilogy and all the series, we've lost a little bit of like the bureaucrat as like the oafish bureaucrat as villain.
Yeah.
You know, and it's great.
Ripe for some storylines there. I mean, the last time we had a little bit of that was the kind of the ill-fated Resistance series, which not a lot of, so that security agency, that whatever the planetary security outfit here, they remind me a lot of the one that was in Resistance. And they had to kind of, they kind of had to placate between the Empire and their own citizens. So like, this reminds me a lot of that. Also, their base, to me, this is one of the moments also when I was like, this is a TV show. Their base has these real grand rooms, but then on the walls, there's just no windows.
They had a couple times like in that room where they were all looking for Cassian. When they first like went to the group that was, you know, one guy was eating blue noodle takeout. I like that group there, but they also had like, there was one window in the top that I saw. There was a ship flying by. I was like, that's a little nice touch. Like, it's such a small part of the scene, but you can still see ships flying around outside.
Very
but
subtle.
Speaking of that group of three, I love like the apathy of all of them just being like, what? No, we're not going to find him. What are you talking about?
Exactly.
And then the guy who was in the, like, checking all the ships that were leaving the planet, who also was like, there's no way you're tracking that. He's like, well, you stay here until you do.
Yeah, they're literally, like, air traffic controllers.
Yeah.
Like, it has the vibe of, like, we're in, like, a dark room and we track, like, ships that come and go, and some ships come and some ships go. Like, and it has that real, like, you know, that dude is this, like true believer, you know, in a dangerous way, surrounded by people that are just like, listen, man, like, I work for the Empire. Like, it's a gig.
Right.
You know, like, what else am I going to do? Like, I got to work somewhere. And he's
I'm on the,
you know, like, we have to honor the tradition, blah, blah, blah. And then that, like, you know, that little crew he gets to go and get Cassian are all like, you could tell that they're all people that their coworkers are like, this guy?
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Where they're just like, this dude takes this way too seriously. And then they get there and it shows that they are like severely incompetent. Like, not able to handle the situation. There's obviously like parallels to law enforcement that are being clearly drawn in the show with like how they handle like the community that they're like just kind of moving through. I thought that was like a fascinating way to kind of portray it, that right. It's like, not only are they like bad guys, but they're also like goobers, you know what I mean?
Right. Well, I mean, that's
like, but dangerous, yeah. Goobers, that's because they're goobers with power who think that they're righteous.
That's one of the strengths, like, the
dangerous thing.
Strengths of The Last Jedi as well, where it's like you're seeing, I think, but the kind of this process, and I don't know if intentional or not, or just how things move, but this, in this kind of attempt to like depoliticize Star Wars, quote unquote. Hey, like, there's this common bureaucracy that we all can, like, kind of be like, this sucks, kind of thing. And I think when you take
that
away, when they went to the gambling planet Batuu?
Canto Bight.
What is Batuu?
Yeah. Batuu is the galaxy's edge planet, which where I now reside.
That's where Mike lives. And they went to Canto Bight, and you had like that guy that was like an alien Karen that was kind of like, hey, they parked their car over.
You mean Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character?
Yeah, exactly.
No, not Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character.
Yeah, it is.
I thought JGL was the guy that with Poe that goes like Yamcha.
No, he does the voice of the guy who rats him out. On
Oh, that's great. Oh, so that's a cool layer, because then you're understanding this world where like, oh, some people are into this, some people are not, and you're juxtaposing against these characters that have a very like straight path of that we know what they got to do, but no one else does. So it's cool to see snippets of the world around them react in different ways, as opposed to I think what we've been getting, which is like two people in a desert talking about what happened.
And it's also playing into like the banality of evil. You know what I mean? Where it's like, these dudes go into this community that one guy, this is a slight spoiler for Sam, but he's here. That guy shoots an unarmed citizen who is like, you're like abusing my partner. Like, you know, and the other officer is like, give me your rifle. And the guy's like, why? Yeah. Why would you take this away? Like, it's just like this very like, it's like, because you're a violent idiot, you know, like, and it's like, I think the only mistake is that they portrayed it like another one of them would be like, no, you can't have a rifle anymore. I thought that was unrealistic. But like they literally like the guy shoots an unarmed citizen and then it's like, what did I do wrong?
You talking about our boy Tim with two M's?
Tim with two M's. Tim with two M's.
That's a Star Wars name.
That's how you
Tim,
know he's
Tim with two M's.
But I'm surprised it wasn't like TIM'M.
Yeah, that seems Tim, fair. He actually was in The Force Awakens, that actor as well. And kind of funny it. That he's now in two Star Wars.
He was in
two characters.
He was in a Broadway production of Angels in America that I saw. Yeah. He was tremendous.
I thought he was great in Mare of Easttown as the deacon. I was really surprised to see him in this.
Wow, didn't work.
But when you bring that up, I really want to talk about something that is key to this. A lot of what happens in Obi-Wan was like, well, they found him and they drew him out, and so that led to the plot of him going to this planet because he had to go for this reason. Character jealousy, which is all relatable to anyone, is what led to Cassian being found out. And I loved that choice of basically Tim being jealous of Cassian because of Bix. And that's what led to eventually him being gunned down. And also the whole issue on the planet is because he called it in out of just basic jealousy, which was not written in the script of like, oh, wow, I'm going to scream it. Like, are you with Cassian? No, it was actually just expressions on his face as he looked at the message. And then you knew what he did. And he went out and he called, but he didn't.
And it wasn't like
deep into it. Yeah,
it wasn't a motivated move. Like, I work for the Empire. I must.
Yeah, like, it was like didn't he just get drunk?
I want to get this nerd out of here.
Well, and then he had to be like sort of shameful when she showed up for the booty call because he was, you know, he had just called it in, but yet he still cared for her, so he wasn't going to turn her away. I do want to say,
I want to be clear. She booty called him.
Yeah,
well, I don't want people to think that I'm misinterpreting this. She was like, I want some Tim in my life.
Well, who doesn't want some Tim with another M?
Tim with two M's.
I want to say one thing. A lot of the times on this podcast, we are always commenting on incredibly good-looking actors. And I don't want to be creepy, but she is an absolutely beautiful woman, the actress who plays Bix. And I think I'm not trying to be weird. I'm just trying to say, like, I think we almost always are very focused on the attractive men, and I want to give some credit to her.
Well, to keep in line with the podcast, I think all the men on the show are beautiful also. My goodness. Diego Luna? How about that face?
Yeah. Well, how about the background actor who has the Joker smile? That guy's very handsome.
Tim? He's Tim. Good.
Two M's. And let's not forget about old Tony Gilroy. We got those glasses.
One thing I don't think we've talked. Yeah. Oh, Chris, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say the you go on. I'm sure yours is more interesting.
No. Go, I
was gonna say I was kind of perusing the cast and crew here, and I noticed that John Knoll is not involved in this at all, which I think is interesting. But that could just be that he didn't have much about the beyond the story. He probably didn't have much about the characters.
They didn't use Photoshop on this one.
Exactly. They didn't. He didn't do the effects or anything. He had worked on the other series. That's why it's a little curious.
Well, yeah, it's a good call out because maybe it's just like he's like, I can't work on everything.
Right. Right. I'm glad you let Chris go first. That was.
Yeah. As soon as I paused I was like, well, this will. Oh, boy.
I just wanted to bring up that we briefly have talked.
Socks.
We talked very early on about Carney and being on the planet and the visuals of that, but I don't know that we've talked enough because it is a through line through all three episodes. And Sam, apologies for some of the spoilers in this, but like them, you don't have the dialogue. You just have them going on this mission to go and find out what happened, but then you're seeing the ravages of the planet. Mm-hmm. You're learning more about who he also is, like, on his motivation of trying to find his sister. Is we just see that relationship again in their body language and what happens between them throughout. But then also where he meets Marva, and the way that all ends. Fiona Shaw has maybe, 3 minutes of screen time mm-hmm. total, and yet I'm in love with the relationship between her
amazing.
And Cassian.
Yeah.
Like, she's so good, and I love her choice there of taking him with, and then the look that she gives him on the ship is so telling and beautiful.
It's fascinating to having everyone seen Rogue One, kind of the paralleling that's happening there. And then just like even that shot that's like down the corridor, which is almost essentially the opening or the final shot of kind of the opening of Rogue One. I thought that was cool. Like I thought like, okay, now I understand why these two people get each other so well.
I think there was a bit of dialogue that was very important, which was we would have all felt that she was a monster for stealing him from the planet if not for her saying, oh, the Empire's on their way. They're going to just kill everyone. So if we leave him here, he's going to die anyway. I just thought that was a nice moment to like solve for the issue of why in the world would she just steal a child?
Right. Why would she go to a planet and steal someone?
Mike, those people were turning green.
Yeah, what was going on there?
That was the only piece. I didn't think that I wasn't a huge fan of the cross cutting. I wish we had just gotten an episode that was the full flashback to like give context later.
I liked it too because it worked and it set up that shot. The shot at the end, like that's what really. Yeah, if you weren't cross cutting, that would have been hard. Yeah,
and it got me. It got me every time when they would cut to the next scene. I'd be like, wait, whoa! Like I was like excited about it.
Well, I think
show rocks.
We've covered pretty much everything in the three episodes so far, Sam.
There were good coats. There were so many good coats. We got to talk about
every coat was good.
Oh my God.
Oh wait, you know what we haven't talked about? Stellan Skarsgård.
Oh, he's great.
Just wonderful.
Stellar skateboard. That's a
stellar skateboard.
That's a joke for anybody who.
He's great. What an unlikely piece of casting.
That's not my joke.
But also the most likely. You know what I mean? Which is kind of Stellan Skarsgård's pocket. You know, it's like. Who would have cast him? But I can't think of anyone else being cast. You know, like that kind of thing.
I liked his time on the bus, on the shuttle. I just liked him having to have a little conversation with the guy about where he was going, what he was up to.
Yeah, he's just great. There's just like a lot of there's a lot of compelling conversations in this show.
Oh, yeah.
It was great.
It's fun to see like, I feel like it works, you know, kind of, I was going to say bi-directionally, but kind of like omnidirectionally with Disney now, because Disney owns so much and has worked with so many people, you know, they always, for the right project, you know, they kind of always bring in a ringer for, you know, a supporting role or something, you know, they pay somebody some real money to come in and be a supporting character or have a cameo or something. And it's always nice to see when like another project benefits, like, you know, Stellan Skarsgård has like had a fairly thankless but like fun role in the MCU for years, but it's like, I'm excited to see, I mean, I haven't encountered him yet in the series, but I do love him as an actor, and I'm like, oh man, this is dope that now we get him in Star Wars because he has an existing relationship through, you know, through Kevin Feige and Marvel, like, to now be in the Star Wars universe. I'm excited for that. I hope they give him plenty to do.
He's playing a little bit more girl with the dragon tattoo than his role in MCU.
Oh, dude, that movie. Ugh, you know I love that movie. Come on.
I love that movie.
That movie rules. It's such a bummer that, like,
throw some Enya in there.
It's a bummer they didn't, like, do, like,
keep it going.
I would have loved to have seen the other two, because I read those books. They were good, and that Fincher's adaptation was great.
I watched all of the original movies, the Danish movies. I did not like them. I thought that Blomqvist was completely miscast, and I much preferred Daniel Craig, and I would have loved if they kept going with those.
He was great.
More Fincher, that would have been great.
So was Rooney Mara. Rooney Mara could have done so much.
Yeah, it's too bad. I guess was it not a commercial success?
I think it just didn't make a lot of money, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Like, it should.
I guess I should know that, because I got
it. Didn't help it. Also that, like, Fincher's movies are so expensive.
Yeah.
He's like plating every detail.
He shoots them for like 7 years.
He has to shoot. Yeah.
Plates
maybe,
every
honestly,
team.
Maybe the second one just hasn't come out yet.
he's still adding stuff to tables and like putting in windows in the background. Do yourself a favor. Go to YouTube and like look at all his special effect work. He just like needlessly is like, maybe we could do this in a shot.
Things you would never think of, like the third wall in a living room.
You'd like never see it, but he like wants it.
Well, I think we know what's on the horizon. Mon Mothma, time in Coruscant.
Can't wait.
Potentially.
Can't wait.
Wow.
There's your fan service
right there.
Yeah.
That's your fan service.
I'm a little concerned about how this is going to feel week to week, because I loved watching three one night. And if we had just one of those, like we talked about earlier, I think I would have been satisfied, because there's just so much good writing in it. I don't think I would have walked away being disappointed. But I'm now like, from what it sounds like, Gilroy has written like three episode arcs that then there's a time jump. And so if that's going to continue, I kind of just want to watch three episodes, but that's all right.
What I can tell you. So just, I mean, on that, as having watched only one last night, it was entirely enjoyable. It feels
that's
like
great.
There was a cliffhanger, you know, like it did not feel like a complete meal, but I mean, it's a TV show. I didn't expect it to. So that was refreshing. Like, I was like, I'm ready for next episode, which I'm probably going to go watch now before bed.
There you go.
We're recording at night, no matter when you're listening to this.
I think that's going to do it for our first three episodes. There's a lot more to come, and I think we could easily do, you know, dig in deeper with more episodes in between, but the droids have lives sometimes that get in the way. Maybe, you know, I'll just sit on the mic by myself and talk for an hour and see if anybody wants to listen. But I think we talked a lot about what makes this show exciting, and very much thrilled to have another episode next week and to be living in this world that Tony Gilroy has built for the next, 9 weeks?
Wow.
Nine more weeks. Amazing.
Just, that
I'm
also
so
feels
excited.
Great, too. Just like a chunk of time. It's nice.
Something to look forward to. Hey, for the geekdom out there, if you got Game of Thrones on Sunday, you got Andor on Wednesday, you got Rings of Power on Friday.
Abbott Elementary, and not a geek show, but it's a good one for Wednesday.
It's a great show, yeah. And I don't even like Game of Thrones, so there's really only two there for me. But that's not bad either. And I like Abbott Elementary. That's my Game of Thrones.
And then Lotto Dream Home. They got a few new episodes of that. So.
Hey, The Amazing Race is back on, guys. Let's not forget about a
Survivor's
good reality competition
back
show.
It's we're back in the golden age of television.
Next week on The Droids, everything that we watch, we'll tell you every bit of it.
We'll be here with Alan Sepinwall. And we'll be talking about the golden age.
He did not like Andor, so we're not bringing
He did not like Andor, no.
Yeah. I actually didn't read his review. I just saw his tweet saying he wasn't a fan. So. I guess I should.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, David Chase didn't make it, so I guess he's upset.
All right, that's going to do it for the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. We will be back next week for more Endor. What they throw.
Beefy.
Coming this fall on Lego Star Wars, the Star Wars Whorehouse.